Okay, next slide. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so then what I try to do is I try to answer all of the questions that I can from the same section. So I don't go, so I'm not jumping back and forth between the surgery tab, the anesthesia tab. So, sorry, I have the meeting is being recorded on my screen. Okay, so that's gone. So I stay in the surgery tab, and the very first thing that I do is I scroll down to the post-op medication to see if it's asking for INO or if it's asking for a specific medication. If it's asking for a medication, I skip that question, I answer it later. And in this example, you'll see it's asking for oral intake. So I know it's asking for INO. So if you scroll down in the surgery section, you will see a whole bunch of different flow sheets. So this is where I go to get the INO. So I'll answer that. And then I kind of scroll up in case validation. I don't answer the questions in order. I should have mentioned that before as well. So then I'll scroll up to the post-op and pre-op physiologic. That's what I answer next. And then I'll go back to these flow sheets. So you see I circled on here the adult PCS perioperative flow sheet. That's where I'm going to get these blood pressures from. And when you go into this flow sheet, it's going to have the most recent blood pressures, and then it'll go to the least recent. So that's why I answer the post-op blood pressure question first, because that's what the information I'm going to see first. So I'll answer the post-op, then the pre-op, and then I am done in the surgery tab, and then I can go into the anesthesia tab. So if we go to the next slide, I know this is looking a little bit busy. I just tried to have as much information on the screen as I could. So I scroll back up into case validation, and now I'm back up at the top to the case information, and I answer the ASA question. And if you just hit, there we go. There's gonna be little pop-ups on the screen. So I answer ASA, and then the next I go to the pre-op and perioperative times, and that's gonna be under the case tracking events. And then next I go to interoperative staff, and that's gonna be in the responsible staff section. And then next I answer the interop physiologic. So that's all in this quick link to anesthesia timeline report, which I'm going to go into further detail in the next slide, but just know that that's what I answer next. So when I'm done answering that, I come back to the anesthesia record. So if you hit the button one more time, you're gonna see some pre-op meds pop up. The playground didn't have any meds there, so I just put a little snip in there so we could see. So I answer the pre-op and post-op meds next because it's at the top of my screen, it's all there. I don't have to scroll up and down. So I'll answer that. However, sometimes you won't see any meds here. So then if that's the case, I just scroll back down to the day of surgery, inpatient medications, and I'll get that information from there. So once I answer the pre-op and post-op meds, then I can answer the inter-op meds and fluids question, which I go into further detail later in this the slideshow as well. So if we go to the next slide, you'll see this is the inter-op physiologic. So this is where we're going to answer our blood pressure questions. So as we see the quick link to anesthesia timeline, if you hit it again, that will bring up this screen. I know it's a little bit blurry, a little bit hard to see, but that says intra-op flow sheet data. So if you hit that, that's going to take you to the intra-op flow sheet data screen. And these are all done in half an hour increments. So you can scroll through, you know, each half an hour. And this is where I get the blood pressures from. So if you hit it one more time, you could see that if you scroll down to the blood pressure, the non-invasive blood pressure, they're all lined up right there. So it's just really easy to scroll through them and be able to look for the highest and the lowest. And then again, you just flip through the half an hour increments. So then if we go to the next slide, this is the inter-op medication and fluid section. I get the fluid question from this graph right here. And I kind of just, it'll tell the time, and then I just look at the time and I look at my graph. And then for the rest of the medication questions, I get it from this graph on the bottom. And then to get more details of the medication, I go to the day of surgery inpatient administered medications. And then next. This is a lab question. So we are almost at the end of our case validation. So here's our lab question. I start with chemistry just because it's at the top of the results. And I get this from the results review. I should have probably said that as well. So if you hit the button, there's chemistry, hit it one more time. There's our glucose. If you do not find the glucose under chemistry, you may find it under a glucose meter or under urine. And then hit it one more time. That's our hematology. And one more time, there's our hematocrit. So we've answered all the questions. I should probably mention that there are times when, I'm just going back to my screen so I can see. You may not find the post-op medication. Oops, sorry. You may not find, yeah. I know, sorry, I put so many, you may not find the post-op medication in the box down here. And that's because of when the patient received the medication. So they may have received it after the patient had, like on the floor, for instance. So if that's the case, then you're gonna have to go out to the MAR to find that information. So I don't have a screenshot of that either, but. Correct. There's your mark. All right. So we've answered all of the questions. Does anybody have any questions for me?
That was awesome, Jessica. Now, I'm curious from the girls and Denise, does this, you guys have done case validation in Epic for a while. Does this, is this reflective of what your Epic looks like and your process looks like also, or do you have different, how's your flow?
I do things a little bit different, but I'm interested to see if I have some of those same tabs that are that she's showing for anesthesia and you know, up top. Like maybe I just haven't wrenched them in. Because I go through like the actual, you know, OR note and the anesthesia report and that kind of thing, but I'm gonna have to check and see if I have some of those, because I do like the way that this is set up. So thank you, nice job.
Thank you.
I have a question, and it has to do with, we're all different facility systems, but are you going through like on a quality role or an RN role or an anesthesia role? Like what's your access and permission to that record?
Anesthesia, and it's, you know, the read only chart.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Pam or Mary or Nikki or Tiffany or Kristen, is this, does this look like Beaumont's Epic? I'm just curious.
It does look very similar, but even within the Beaumont system, there's a look, you know, with the different facilities, there's a little bit of different way to look at different things. You know, a different flow sheet for the Dearborn site might look a little bit different than the Royal Oak site. Mm-hmm. So you kind of make those small adjustments, but overall it was very similar.
Is your order the same? Do you guys go through the order of those questions in a similar way?
Yeah, very similar.
Because I'm wondering if maybe, especially since now Trinity has Epic also. So that's five more sites, plus Bronson, plus Henry Ford, plus Beaumont, and Sparrow. I mean, I'm sorry, Amy. We're down to like two Cerner sites. I'm so sorry. But within the state of Michigan, I'm wondering if reordering the questions to match this flow would help all of you?
Yes.
That was gonna be my question.
You know, like Denise and Beaumont team, does this, if this is similar to how you answer the questions, then I'm wondering if we should reorder.
Especially that ASA thing. You know how she initially said she looks at this information, but you can't answer the ASA question from that area. You have to wait until you get into an anesthesia report. Mm-hmm. So that one's kind of hanging out there until you get to the next step.
Yeah.
As far as ordering the flow.
Uh-huh. I'm sure Brooke would love to reorder these again.
She was here like a minute, and I'm like, hey, we got to reorder these. And she's like, I have an idea. We just reorder them, I feel like, every other year, trying to make it easier. But now that we have so many sites, and poor Jackie's got a hybrid going on with Centricity and Epic, she's got to go between two systems. It's kind of wackadoo, but we're supposed to be on Epic eventually too. So then hopefully this would help her out also.
Spectrum is Epic, I believe.
And the times could all be together, just, you know, all the times. You know, they have, like, in pre-op, they'll have the one time where the patient was actually admitted to the facility, but then the rest of the times are in a separate area.
Yeah,
that would be good. Because in Epic, you can hover over the surgery on the left side, and you can see the whole timeline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just hovering over the room number gives you the whole thing.
Yeah, that would be helpful, I think, then, just to at least group the times at least. We're going to save this presentation, and we might just be building case validation off from it for the next round, if that's okay with everyone. So the Trinity team, you guys are, you know, new to Epic, but you've been in there some. Was this helpful? Do you think this will work for some of your case validation when we get there?
Anything helps.
Yeah, hopefully, because I find myself jotting things down because I'm like, oh, this is going to come later. So I'll write it down to plug it in on my next venture.
Yeah, I am glad we're recording this. I think we might be playing this back in a future meeting, Trinity friends.
Oh, no.
Because I know the ACQR meeting is just once a year, but I'm just thinking it might be helpful to have one twice a year, because this is the meeting that we get the most out of, you know, with how we're doing our jobs. Mm-hmm. Just a thought, not to make any more work for you guys.
No, we love this day. Would you guys want to do two half days, or do you want to do two full days? What would be most helpful, you think? And what will your administrators allow you to be out of the office for?
Well, I think because it's part of our job, I mean, we would have to check, I guess, to see.
How many people are actually working remotely versus in the hospital? And how many people expect that to change?
I think I'll be remote forever now.
At Beaumont, we're remote right now.
Yeah, I think we're remote.
We could even do
at least
one of
the
days
of the year.
Like this. We could even do one day, you know, do one of them as a WebEx.
Like an interim, and then have the phone meeting where we actually get to see each other. Yeah.
Only because at the collaborative meetings, I know we do the lunch and we do the upgrades, which is helpful. It just doesn't seem there's enough time to really go through like this. I think for the newer sites that are bringing Epic up, I think this is really good to be able to just review how everybody's doing things, get ideas. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I was just thinking about it. I just think out of anything, we get a lot. I get a lot out of it. And I've been doing this for a while. So
well, that's good. That's good. We hope people continue to get a lot out of it. If
absolutely.
Not, then we gotta stop doing it. But I'm wondering if we do like maybe, I don't know, like around upgrade time in the spring. So maybe like March, maybe before the April meeting, maybe we do this sort of, you know, WebEx kind of thing again, maybe a 3-hour meeting. Would that be too long? Not long enough? What do you think?
I think it sounds great. I find this very beneficial. And especially like we're just transitioning to Import Manager. So some of this pre and post-op data that, you know, she's covering here, I'm not really doing yet. So it's giving me those thoughts like, okay, yeah, this is good. So this is really good information for me. And every time we meet, I feel like I have some really good takeaways. So I would love to have it twice a year. Yeah.
Maybe we do like a 3-hour thing in like March, like this WebExy, and then, because I have a feeling we might all still be home, who knows? And then maybe we plan for next September to be in person for a day. like, you know, at the hotel.
Sounds good.
That sounds really good.
Yep.
Everybody would be in favor of that.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll get planning that. And I think that would be doable. I'll ask Tori, but I feel like, Tori, are you there still? She might still be here. I feel like that would be totally possible. Okay. Well,
actually, Kate, you know, we really don't, like, it doesn't have to be a very, like a structured meeting almost, just in spring, you know, if, you know, there's upgrades, that's great. But, you know, even just to get together to say, you know, to have something like what's working, what's not.
Tips and tricks.
At the Beaumont sites, you know, each quality group and the changing anesthesia departments and everything want different things. So if we just group together and say, okay, this is working, and then, you know, stuff like that. I don't want to make a lot more work for you guys.
No, it's not work actually for us. I mean, we would have to do this anyway, the upgrade stuff we have to prep anyways, and this is way easier for us to get the upgrade information to you than trying to put, like, you know, tutorials together or something. That would be painful. We would much rather throw some slides together and talk about the changes and then do this sort of, this, we didn't do any of this. I don't know if you've noticed, but Amy did some slides. We had Jessica do some slides. You guys did some slides. So this actually was not hard at all for us. We were all just texting yesterday, Meredith, Brooke, and I saying, like, are we sure we have everything done? This is so easy. We like whipped this together so easy. So this would definitely be doable for a March meeting, I think. I don't know, Mayor Brooke, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
totally agree.
Okay, cool. Okay, well, Beaumont team, not to put you on the spot, but you're up again. So do you want to go first with your case drill down with diagnostics? Is that cool? Can we start with this first?
Yeah, that's good. So I'm Tiffany. I'm the ACQR at Beaumont, Trenton, Wayne, and Taylor. And so this is how I do my case drill down when I'm looking at data diagnostics. So you kind of see, like, this is an example for the intrap bolus meds. You can see how they're all hovering around 100%. And then in May 2020, there's a dip to 98. So it's like, what's going on there? Something maybe not mapped, or, you know, there are other cases that maybe didn't have bolus meds. So when you notice that, you just kind of click on the dot and you click on your open case list for a selected month. You can go to the next slide. And then, so this pops up and it shows you, you know, how many cases there are and how many cases meet the criteria. And I like to click on where it says has bolus, the intrap bolus meds, so that it brings the yes and no, separates them. So you can kind of see, you know, are you expecting these ones to have bolus meds or not? You know, because maybe that's what the issue is. So then you just click on one of the cases and click on open case. So you can go to the next slide, and that brings up your case viewer. And it shows you the red square up at the top, tells you your interrupt time, your anesthesia start to stop. So then that way you can look at the bolus meds on the left. If you click on that, this yellow screen in the middle pops up, and that shows you what medications were given, and it tells you what time and what date were given. And you can see that there was nothing given intra-op on this case. So if that's something that you expect, then you know it's correct. Otherwise, if you expect that they should have had some kind of medication, then you would go open your EHR and you'd look and make sure if maybe something wasn't handed off yet, or maybe you don't have something mapped that should be mapped. So then that's when you would go into, from there, you'd go to your mapping, you'd go to Import Manager Assistant, and you would check and see, you know, your handoff log and all of that. If everything's correct, then good, you get to just keep going on. If not, then you may have to contact the coordinating center or Genevieve for help, depending on what you find. So you can go ahead and go on to the next slide. One thing that we did notice this year, I don't know how many other sites noticed it, but we had an issue where halfway through the month, there's no data for that month whatsoever. So you can see, like, August 2020, it's at zero, and it was last updated on August 19th. So there should be something there. So what we did, click on the open case and for the selected month, and it shows up the other one, the other red square says there's 282 cases, but nobody has any bolus meds. So that's obviously not right. So you can go ahead and go to the next slide. So then this is the Import Manager Assistant. We use this a lot. almost every day. We look at this, and this one here, the one up right at the top, shows the handoff queue, and it shows that everything for August is at a priority 50, and it should be at a 10. So then what we go from there is the one that's kind of in the background. That's the overview. And we look at August cases, and you can click on any day on there, and it shows you at the bottom, you know, when it was queued for handoff, the last handoff, and you can see as of August 19th, stuff from August 7th has been waiting on the queue since the 7th, but it's never handed off. So from there, we end up exporting the logs, and we send that to Genevieve, and we send her the screenshots, and then she usually gives us a script that we give to our IT team, and they reprioritize it, and everything hands off like within a couple of hours. And then you're able to actually see your actual data, how it's supposed to look. And then if there's any issues from then, you have to go back and start over again and see if there's something else that may be missing, mapping or otherwise.
This particular issue is a little bit unique to Beaumont, just so that the rest of you know, you're probably thinking like priority 50, what the heck, we don't have that. Beaumont was unfortunately a guinea pig, so, whether they know it or not. And so they converted to import manager first, and we had some hiccups. Is that an appropriate word to use, Pam and Mary and Tiffany?
Yeah, big burps.
Big burps. We had big burps, and it didn't go that well. At first, we had a lot of data to hand off, and so we had to reprioritize how things handed off. A lot of you, when you started with import manager, we started you with just a month. And we handed that same month off over and over and over again. So Denise, that's what you guys are doing. Trinity, that's what you're doing. You can all thank Beaumont that now you get to just hand off a month, and we learned the hard way with Beaumont. We had a year. So we were trying to hand off a year of data with all that mapping, and it would just get slogged down and it didn't go well. And so we had to do some reprioritization. So Tiffany and Pam and Mary and, well, Kristen wasn't here quite yet, but I'm sure she's up to snuff now, and Nikki all figured out how to manage Import Manager Assistant. They're probably the experts at it. Honestly, they probably use Import Manager Assistant more than Brooke, Mary, and I do at this point, because they had to. The good news is they're experts at Import Manager Assistant. The bad news is they had to slog through some pain. But honestly, if you guys have questions about Import Manager Assistant or how to work through it or that sort of thing, those five are they're your girls. They know the ins and outs and the best way to handle it. Brooke, Mary, and I use it, and we're happy to teach it to anybody, but we hope that you don't have to use it quite as much probably as Tiffany and their team have to. We think we improved with some of the other implementations. You will still come in here, like she's saying, and check to see if your data is handing off, if it consumed. All of this is real. Like, this is real life. This is import manager life. You got to see if your stuff is handing off and if you need the IT team or not. So, Tiffany, this is awesome. I will say, of the ACQRs, how many of you get an import manager assistant monthly, even? Raise your hand. Do you all get in there monthly at least? Yeah. So some of you do have to get in there and check it out to see what's happening. Yeah, it's not as common as, so Tiffany, this is probably more helpful than you even know, because a lot of ACQRs just haven't had to be in here that much. Their data just flows. Believe it or not, their data just goes like it's supposed to. So thank you for tapping into this and showing us this part here. All right, so should I go to the next slide, my friend?
Yeah, you can go to the next slide. It's just any questions or feedback from anybody.
Anybody have any questions for Tiffany while you got an import manager expert here? Awesome. Thank you so much, Tiffany. That was great. I think data diagnostic drill down can be tricky.
I have one question. It's Jerry. Do you have consistent IT support?
We do.
It's the same person. That's what you mean by consistent, Jerry.
It's the same person. Right.
So that seems to be sometimes the, you know, the hard stops. Yeah. I mean, I think we all experience that when we get into seeing what's in the queue and if things are sort of, you know, slowing down.
Well, we had, this is the issue was because it was new to everybody, in general, the import manager assistant could have been something that IT would have taken on themselves to kind of look at, but we kind of had to look at it ourselves and understand what the numbers meant and where we were missing before we went to IT. And normally the best part was is we could contact Genevieve, she'd write the script, we would put a service request in for IT to fix it, and then it would be fixed very shortly, but they don't know how to write the scripts or anything, if that makes sense.
Oh yeah, thanks.
You know anything about that, Jerry?
Maybe.
Oh, this is funny. Is this foreign to anybody? I don't think anybody. I know most.
I think we're all kind of tiptoeing around an issue that we're not really talking about.
We may or may not have built Import Manager Assistant for this very reason, just so that the ACQRs could self-serve and figure out if they needed IT or not. Because the less we maybe need to go to them, maybe the better. I mean, maybe. Just maybe.
Maybe.
No, maybe absolutely.
So yes, no, Import Manager Assistant is helpful. When we initially built it, honestly, it was supposed to be for the IT team, but we found that the ACQRs access it more, just to figure out, do they even need to go to their IT team, or can they just wait for handoff to run in the next day or something?
Yeah, it's a great starting point for the ACQRs. It's very helpful.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Okay. Next up, so Pam, are you going to cover measures in the provider guide, newsletters, and failed case summary?
Yes.
Awesome.
So when I first started, when Mary came on, we made a provider guide up for the ORs, and it had only, 12 measures on it. So each time new measure is added, we update the measure provider guide, whether, you know, all of us work together on this, so whoever gets to it first will add them on. And we found that when we would go to our quality meetings, we would take the new updates, and a lot of places were still laminating them and putting them in the ORs. So as all the measures, all of us use it, or I use it for sure when I'm doing my failed case review, just as a quick look, so I don't have to keep looking at all the specs all the time just to get an idea if I'm run into what's the number supposed to be. So this is, you can flip to the next slide. So there's all the measures on there. So it's a good tool for the providers, not for them necessarily to carry around, but just to have in the OR. And you can make it anything you want, the P4Ps or transfusions, whatever you're working on, if you want to cut it down. Next slide. So there's, like I said, there's a lot. It fits on two pages. You can do front to back, you can laminate them, whatever you want to do. Next slide, yep. And then if they want to go to the MPOG measures, there's the website on there too. So, and the next slide. So this is kudos to Tiffany. She set up this template for all of us. We send out a newsletter every other month to our sites. And then we work on it. We change it for, like, for example, for Troy and Farmington, I'll put the percentages for our P4Ps on there for our measures. We'll update it with any site-specific information we want to send out, but there's a different highlight for a different measure, whatever we want to work on, and our names and the quality physician champion. So we do try to get it out every couple months, and we get really good feedback from it. And next slide. This is the one, because we have new North Stars coming into the Beaumont sites. So Tiffany designed a newsletter with all the provider measure guides and then what Aspire is. And this will be sent out to the new groups. I believe in August is when North Star started for legacies or the Oakwood sites, and then January is when it's going to start for Royal Oak, Troy, Grosse Pointe, Farmington Hills still up in the air. So, and next slide. And this is just a synopsis of what the P4P measures are, so the new group knows what the sites are working on. And next slide. So when our scorecard used to reflect, we had to go to the sites once a month to meet with our quality champions. And even when the score, even when it was not required for the Beaumont sites to do this anymore, we continued to do the site meetings. I feel the biggest thing is we feel like the connection needs to be there in order to make quality improvement. You can't just say over the phone, this, here you go. But with COVID, we've had to, you know, limit our site meetings. So a lot of this is done through Skype, but over time, all of us have been able to input specific information into our monthly agendas or failed case reviews of what we want the sites to see every month. And specific sites want different things, but overall they want a generic, they want to know what's happening in all the sites or all the, on all the measures. So we do the current score for the three P4Ps with the year to date. And then the rest of the measures, we just do the monthly score for that month. Some measures we go in and look at each case. For example, BP03, this is a measure that we would trend. We're going to do a lot of trending because we want to find out where the specific like time frame for minutes below 65 are. Is it 16 to 19, 20 to 29? And then once we take this information back to our sites, do they want us to do a deeper dive into plastics or podiatry or anything? This is all the information we have. You can go to the next slide. The rest of them, for example, my sites always want to see glucose 3 and they always want to see the transfusion measures, a deeper dive in those. Farmington, I just talked to yesterday, they want us to go into, they want me to do a deeper dive into AKI and PONV3. So everything's different, but basically you're giving them a synopsis of what has happened with these measures. Some of the measures I just continue to track, like NMB 1 and 2, the measures that we're doing fine on, I tend not to dig into, but it's basically what the quality champion wants. And next slide. And same thing, you know, some of the measures we can trend, the larger sites with, you know, greater than 4,000 or 5,000 cases. If we have, for example, you know, if we have 1,500 cases in our failed case review, we're not going to look at every case, but we're going to trend some of the measures. Next slide. And it's just basically all the measures. I've looked at them all. This is what I send them. And then I send them an email. And hope a lot of times I get to talk to them Skype. If not, we just email back and forth until we get permission to go back in the hospitals. So, and I think that's it. Anything? Any questions?
Those are awesome tools, Pam, especially if you're new or experienced ACQR. I think it's always helpful just to share these tools because we just keep generating new measures. So as soon as you build the tool, you got to update it. I think Kathleen put even in the chat that she'd like you to share that, Pam, if you can. Are you comfortable putting that on Basecamp? The first three slides, you know, the list of measures that you put in the OR of like what's excluded. That's what you want, right, Kathleen?
Because I know that you had actually provided that and I was going back to revise that to add all the measures to it, but I don't have the original source document. So
if you we can share it. And like I said, no matter because I'm doing the talking or whatever, it's been a team. That's the nicest thing about working with the team that I work with is we do everything, you know, we still have our different sites, but it's always a team effort when it comes to this. Or for example, the mapping, you know, it seems like we're never caught up with that. just different things. So yeah, we'll share anything.
Awesome. Thank you.
Hi, I have, it's Michelle. I have a little thing that I noticed too, when it comes to the, like you've got the three measures that have been identified for 2020. Mm-hmm. And so I found that, and I almost, it almost sounds like kindergarten, but every month I send out the top five and I put emojis, you know, yay, no, with how we're doing with the graph and everything. And honestly, I can say I get more emails going, love the graphics, this is great. I told Jessica, I said, oh yeah, make it about fifth or sixth grade so that they can look at it really fast. And then I get a lot of questions going, okay, what, you know, what are we missing and that type of thing. But I've also included the previous month's scores, any of the things that we're missing by and that type of thing. But it's kind of, I call it the top five and send it out on monthly basis along with the overalls and the monthly. And I send it to everybody and it seems to work, as crazy as that sounds.
No, it's not crazy. Mary's a great, Mary has great emojis and pictures. She can
So fast. And I think, and then you're sitting there going, oh my God, you know, they like this. And I'm going, okay, whatever works, right? So right. I figure if you're just not sending stats, because I mean, truthfully, when I see stats all the time, it gets kind of boring. So if you throw some little things like that in, they seem to really get the picture more or less.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think any way you can get the provider's attention is good. Because if they're asking questions, then, I mean, because the biggest part of this is just educating, communicating these measures. A lot of them just don't even know what the measure criteria is, let alone what their individual site performance is on it, let alone what their individual performance is on it. So if we can start communicating that out, and I think focusing on the key measures, Pam, is huge. I mean, the list is over 30 measures now. There is no site or individual that should be working on 30 measures at a time. That's just insane. So we've got to pare it back and make, you know, if you focus on the P4P measures and then one additional measure that, you know, whatever, maybe your OB anesthesiologists are interested in or something, fine. But getting crazy and trying to do 30 of them is just too much. Now, should they all, you know, if they want to know what glucose one is, even though it's not a focus measure, then obviously we educate them on it. But trying to focus and actually improve 30 measures is not doable.
Well, one thing, like with the glucose three, they were finding out the handoff from pre-op to post to OR. They weren't always getting the glucose or the time that it was taken. So a lot of the education has been done with pre-op and post-op now because the measures are flowing into those areas.
Yeah, so, that's what we found too at Michigan. Yeah. It was funny because we actually were like, oh, they took one in pre-op, but no one treated it. And then we took it again in trap just to double check that it was high. And it's still high, believe it or not. If you don't treat a glucose, guess what happens? It just stays high.
So, right. So then, you know, where they were now, I think one site's doing post-it notes. Somebody was looking into stopwatches for 90 minutes. But basically, you just need one more thing for oral handoff, you know, not just glucose was. The glucose was 210 at 10 o'clock, you know, it's just an extra step. So they've gone to the pre-op, like I said, and post-op, and that's been really helpful for that.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's huge, huge, huge. And it's little stuff. I mean, some of this isn't rocket science, right? But it's just when they have so much on their plate as nurses, they're getting the patient the antibiotic in and prepping them, getting their IV in, and, you know, they're doing all the things and they check a glucose. But then, like, that next step to hand off that the glucose is high, or
I know,
better is build in a, like, we're talking about at Michigan, well, first we got to get our intra-op glucoses, you know, figured out and get that on a sliding, not a sliding scale, but on a protocol. But then expanding that out to pre-op and PACU so that then the nurses can just treat those sugars without having to do all this extra communication. Like, let's just empower the nurses to take care of the high blood sugar with orders.
You know, like,
right. And that actually comes back to some of the anesthesiologists that are old school that don't think they need to be treated. Or then you get the inpatients that were treated with two units on the floor and they don't want to treat them with any more, even though their sugar's still high. You know, so there's a lot of factors in that, but look at
it's all just education. Yeah, that's awesome. Great. Yeah,
can I ask a question about those glucose? There's some debate because if you give your insulin for an elevated glucose through the IV, you will expect to see a result within 90 minutes. But if you're giving it sub-Q, a lot of the literature says 2 hours, but we're checking in 90 minutes, even though we're only giving sub-Q. And that's one thing I've gotten pushback from a limited number, but it's, you know, everybody's got their own idea about how things should work. Is there any discussion about that time frame?
I think our thought, most of the literature says to not use sub-Q in those areas. And so we're using it based on, you know, giving it IV because that's what the literature recommends. And so then you would be able to know what you're monitoring them constantly for the entire time. So using IV insulin is not scary. You know what I mean? If you're using IV insulin and then like walking away and going to check your patient in 2 hours, obviously sub-Q is better off. But in those settings, insulin IV is recommended. I don't know, Brooke, have you read anything else in the literature about that in your glucose writing, your glucose measure writing?
No, I'd agree. It supports using IV insulin. Also, you get credit in the measure for treating along with rechecking. So that 90 minute time frame, you know, they should have already, if they treated it, they should have already passed anyway.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask a question though? Is there something in the specs that say if you give IV insulin, check it in 90 minutes, but if it's sub-Q, because I know at a few of the sites, they're giving sub-Q, they're not doing IV insulin, especially in the pre-op area and then going into the OR. Mm-hmm. They're still giving sub-Q.
St. Mary's in Livonia is also, it's all sub-Q.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I know Farmington Hills is. And is there, because that's their big argument.
And they want to wait 2 hours to recheck. They don't want to wait 90 minutes. They think that extra half hour, they're waiting to see if it comes down with that sub-Q dose.
So
if you're only giving two units sub-Q, it's not going to do a whole lot. But
yeah, I didn't want to say that, but yes, I'm like, it's like a whiff.
Yeah, it is.
I know.
But they're using it by the standards that are established by the policy for normal glycemia, established by the hospital.
Yeah.
So they're using standards from the floor in the operating room. Mm-hmm. And perioperatively, let me redefine that, not just in the operating room. It's perioperative. Mm-hmm. So
we can take that back. I mean, it seems like a good discussion for quality committee because I doubt that Livonia is the only place or Beaumont's the only place that the nurses are giving sub-Q insulin. I think that was the fad, was to adopt the floor protocols in pre-op and PACU, kind of like, you know, nursing to nursing. But I think more and more with like the SAMBA recommendations and such, people are moving to IV insulin, just getting it going, because the likelihood that patient's going to come down with your two units of sub-Q insulin is low and you're going to have to start a drip intra-op anyways, most likely, because they're probably not going to come down. Maybe in the, you know, outpatient setting, it's probably all right because they're going to get their meds afterwards and go home and go back to their normal life. But in the inpatient setting, those folks might end up on a drip anyhow because they're going to need to just get controlled. You know, if they're sitting that high.
This sounds like a great opportunity for a normal glycemia toolkit.
Hey, did we announce that we're taking 2021 off from toolkits? Did that come out yet?
Doesn't mean Kathleen can't do her own.
We don't want to hold you back, Kathleen. We want to give you the full power of your own toolkit.
I would say most of the sites at Beaumont do sub-Q. I'm going to look into that more, but even at Royal Oak and Troy, I mean, some do IV. So
it seems like a good quality committee discussion anyhow, because maybe we need to expand that recheck to 2 hours of sub-Q potentially.
or at least address in quality committee should sub-Q insulin continue to be the standard in pre-op and PACU. And if they say yes, well, then we need to accommodate it.
Even in intra-op, I mean, if you're going to, you should make it all a peri-op. I mean, as a quality committee, if you can make a recommendation that this should be the standard of care, we might be able to change that practice. But there's no motivation to change it now.
Right.
Well, I would hate to say this. Well, I'm going to say it. Most of the physicians, if they're doing sub-Q and they're ordering sub-Q, they're not going to change the IV, especially in the pre-op, post-op areas, maybe in the OR. But just saying.
Change is hard.
Change is hard.
We will get there, but change is hard. Okay. Well, then I think we're on to the next. Any other comments on those tools from Beaumont?
Thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks. Thanks, Beaumont team. I know you guys all worked together to get that done. So thank you. Okay. Last, but certainly not least, Jerry Hyder from St. Joe's. I asked her, so for a long time, Jerry did all failed cases for like all measures. It was insane. I mean, hundreds of cases. We had Mark do some, I don't remember what it was for, Mayor. Do you remember? Or Brooke, why did we pull this analysis? It was some silly thing to find out who was accessing something the most, like who was accessing the dashboard or something the most, right? Wasn't it something like that?
Yeah, Jerry was the winner.
Like 300 and some cases a month. I mean, it was insanity. And to which I'm like, what are you doing, Jerry? How can we help you? Like, this is crazy. But she knows failed case review is the takeaway on that. She knows, she does a ton of it. You all do a ton of failed case review, but Jerry gets, I think she had a quality champion that requested a lot of failed cases to be reviewed. And so she was real gracious and she did it. So you guys hopefully will be able to take some nuggets away from this. And I hope we have a conversation about it. I want to know if the new tools are working, what your feedback is with new measures, that sort of thing. All right, Jer, take it away.
Okay. So I'm Jerry and I cover the facilities in Ann Arbor for St. Joe, and it includes Chelsea and Livingston. So I have a variety of areas that populate failed case review. As you know, Aspire provides us with a dashboard that promotes a lot of failed cases sometimes. There's a lot of measures. It can definitely impact the amount of cases that you see. So I've been looking at them for a while and I'm still learning, and I know a lot of you have been looking at them for a while, and it's, we all just sort of find our niche, but like Kate said, all of the things that you guys have already talked about was a really good segue in for me, because it's just this type of feedback that we all just sort of glom onto and really need. I stand alone, you know, I don't have other team members that are with me to sort of navigate this stuff. So like I said, I've just sort of paddled along and have figured it out as I go. But for failed case review or flagged case review, as we try to say now, I try to, you know, look at those cases that are below threshold, for those measures that are below threshold, and of course include our P4P or any focus measures that we're looking at the time. The size and the number of sites that you have will definitely influence the volume of cases. You know, there's less cases at our outpatient sites, and there's a lot more cases at our main hospital and the inpatient sites. The measure specification also influences the amount of cases, just the inclusion criteria itself. You know, each month, depending on the measure, I can have, like Kate said, no cases to review or hundreds of cases to review. So it can be somewhat daunting. And the cases that fall out that the measure is below threshold, you know, if there's, you know, 20 cases, you know, I look at them. If there's 120 cases, I'm probably not going to be able to look at all those. So next slide. it's sort of that pile of here's all this data, try to sort it out, try to get it organized. Communicating with the MD champion is key so that you can try to, you know, stay on task to look at, you know, what's the progress is or what the trends are for specific measures and be able to provide feedback to those individual provider questions that, you know, pop up. It usually occurs after they have gotten their monthly emails. And it's like, they contact me because they were thinking they were so vigilant for a certain measure and then their performance was lower than they thought. So then I'm able to just sort of, you know, filter in those cases for that provider and take a look at, you know, why they fell out. You know, it was, the criteria was a 30-minute duration and three of their cases were 32 minutes or, you know, whatever it may be. It just provides that clarity, that clarity for them. And then just, you know, really examining if they're true fails, like, why do we have 25 failed cases? You know, like what's going on? So just try to, you know, examine the specifics for any of those trends that you're seeing. You know, is it a specific site? Is it a specific group of providers? The service type? Is the documentation flowing and being captured appropriately? You know, sometimes there's gaps with the data extraction, especially with the labs that we had when we were on the Cerner platform. You know, it was just like, oh, we're going to let it process again, you know, and let's give it one more chance to process and see how it, you know, turns out from that. So it's like, okay. And, you know, you're sort of, you know, caught up in it then, you know, you're like, I need to see this move, you know, I need to, you know, see what's going on. So, and then, you know, I always, if I can't wrap my head around it, phone a friend at the coordinating center and just like, you know, you guys help me with this. And, you know, they're awesome. They're always right there to sort of put the net under me and catch me when I'm falling. So next slide. So, and then you have all these cases, you know, looking, staring you in the face and you need to sort of wrangle them in, you know, you get your case report downloaded and then you can look at those cases, you know, ID the cases in the case viewer or go right to your batch MRM lookup, depending on the number of cases. Sometimes it's easier to go with that when you have a higher volume and just get those loaded up and then simultaneously, you know, be able to review that case in the EMR so that you can take a look at, you know, comparing the values and the accuracy, like is, you know, like I mentioned earlier, it's just to sort of do that drill down and make sure that, yep, this is exactly what happened. They never checked a crit after that second unit, you know, or before that second unit. And, you know, it's right there for you to see. So when I do review the data and trends, I put my stuff up on spreadsheets. I don't, you know, you can use whatever type of, you know, organization works for you, but I just pulled the AKI on pulmonary O2. It's sort of a busy slide, sorry about that. But I just populate, you know, that information that MPOG has already pre-populated and get my lists organized so that I can see for AKI, there were like 15 cases for this particular month. And I look at those creatinines, you know, and the elevation within the 7 days, but then I take it to look at the patient's hospitalization time and see if they really stayed at that level of creatinine or if they trended downward. The majority of them do trend downward or even go back to a normal creatinine. So that's the kind of discussions that the physician champion is, you know, sort of leans towards. AKI is a sticky measure anyway. And, you know, sometimes it's not really a huge priority, but at least, you know, I've looked at it and I can sort of rattle off, well, you know, three of them, you know, all of them, you know, did well or they didn't do well or whatever it was. If it really turned into a negative outcome, I'll be able to share that with the physician. For pulmonary O2, there were 59 cases for this month. And, you know, I just sort of see what the services are and what the median tidal volume was. 8 is that, you know, less than 8 is what we're looking for. And so out of these 59 cases, I look at to see, the gender. There were only 6 males for one thing. So we're still trending with the majority of these flag cases are females. And how many of them were really out of bounds and over 10 cc's of tidal volume was delivered? Well, there were only 2 actually that met that criteria. And then there are the ones that just sort of eked over the 8 mark. And so I look at those to see, you know, how many were less than 8.2, and there were 13 cases. So that way we can sort of break it down a little better for the conversation with the staff or the MD champion, so that it's not just, you know, like, what's going on with these 60 patients? You know, it's a little more, it gives me a little more clarity and a little more reference to go back to, so that I can remember, like, oh, that's what was going on, and try to look at the cases. So next slide. So the workflow for failed case review is tedious sometimes for all of us. When you're first starting, like Kate said, the new dashboard is going to be very helpful in being able to, you know, see a more specific level of measures. You know, looking at all those measures at once is pretty overwhelming. So just concentrating on a few measures is very helpful. And then I think, like Amy said, just checking the relevant, you know, if it's relevant for your site, or if it is a quality improvement opportunity, and then continue those discussions, you know, on a monthly basis. During COVID, we didn't have a whole lot to chat about, but, you know, we are catching up again and things are picking up. So keep your organization to what facilitates your specifics, you know, just whatever's useful for you. And, you know, all of the data that we gather, I mean, it's just to improve the quality. It's not, you know, it's non-punitive, even though it's a flagged or a failed case. You know, we just need to, like, get away from it being, you know, that bad connotation. And some of the measures, you know, just there aren't a lot of cases. That was another thing Amy said. You know, the needle may move very slowly. I mean, sometimes it's like watching paint dry, because it's like, there's nothing going on. Why did we choose this? You know, why are we looking at this? So it's, you know, it just sort of generates those kinds of conversations. But yet going into it, these are, you know, things that are, I think, nice to know. So thanks for listening.
Awesome, Jer. Thank you for doing that.
Sure.
Do you guys all use the failed case report tool now? Are you all exporting out of there?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Or I will when we have data.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I love that batch MRN lookup. That was
That's the best thing ever.
Oh my God. Yeah.
So one of the things I have to say in true confessions at the coordinating center. So when we create a new measure, we're like, oh shoot, we got to add it to the failed case, you know, report, whatever. So sometimes we're a little delayed in getting it there. So just let us know if it's not there. And then also, we may not have all the columns that you want in your first review, like when you're exporting out of there. So if you're like, hey, you guys released this new measure and it's got like age and nothing else, I could use some more descriptors. Just reach out and let us know if you need additional columns, because it may sometimes not be at the top of our mind when we're rolling out a new measure. We're thinking about, like, is it accurate? Are people going to be real upset with the criteria? You know, we're validating for accuracy, and we kind of forget about, oh, well, eventually people will want to pull down these failed case reviews and actually improve this measure. We haven't thought that far ahead usually. So don't hesitate to reach out. Any other comments on failed case or flagged case review? Thank you, Jerry, for saying that. I am going to struggle probably the hardest on this and call it failed for far longer than it needs to be called failed. But yeah, I think calling it flagged, nothing's really changed. The measures still are acting the same, but just using that different verbiage gets away from the feeling of it being punitive, especially for measures like AKI, where the anesthesia provider may not have been able to do anything differently. And so they didn't fail. Nobody failed here. The patient may have failed. The patient had a bad day, but we maybe didn't have anything to do with that in particular. And so saying flag just means like, please review this case. And if there's nothing you could have done differently, that's okay.
That's the one they get the most questions about from the staff. And I've enjoying this vacation from people questioning.
From emails.
Yes, I am enjoying it.
Any other comments, questions, thoughts on how you do your flagged case review or what we can do better at the Coordinating Center to facilitate this work? Because this is really where it starts. Like Jerry said, identifying those trends and figuring out what quality improvement project I even need to do. Like before you get to Amy's step, you got to do Jerry's step, right? We all have to do flagged case review, and it's not the most fun. Although I find myself dreading flagged case review days, like when I'm going through flagged cases. And then when I get into it, I'm like, oh my gosh, I got to read all about this. Like what happened to this patient? Where did we go wrong? And then I get like in, I'm sure you guys all have this, right? Like where you're like, you become a detective. The idea of it is like daunting. But then once I get in and start doing it, I'm like, oh my, yeah, we got trouble here. We got trouble right here in River City. We're doing bad things. We could fix this. So I think, it's a lot of work, but if there's anything we can do, we want to know, because we do want it to not take up your whole life. Believe it or not, we don't want it taking up your whole life. Yeah.
I was wondering, you're going to do the SSI. Are you going to include smoking on that?
Because that's... We should be able to.
Because it's a lot of... Because I have the spine surgery on the side. So there's always like, do they smoke? And I'm like...
Oh, I mean, look.
Did you check? Did you draw a lab to see if they did? No.
Oh, that's good feedback. Yeah. Anything else? Any other changes to flag case review? Awesome. Okay. Well, the only wrap up I have for you guys is, as always, make sure you're populating your provider contacts, because VBR has to be pulled soon. And if you don't have your attendings information in there, we can't give them the money that they deserve. So please do what you can to keep your provider contacts updated. If you have new providers trickling in, as you know, you have to upload those cases to Central first before they'll populate provider contacts as a row, but keep an eye out for those and get those all in. I think I have to pull those reports at the end of December. So you have some time, but do the best you can to get it as populated as you can. Trinity, you're going to have to do it in January probably.
So don't worry about it until then?
Yeah, you can't. Yeah, you don't have any data. So that's that. And thanks for joining us today. Brooke, Mayor, did you have any other updates or anything you want to share with them?
No, it was great to see everybody.
It was. We were looking forward to it. It was a great day.
It was. It was so fun.
Thank you to Kate for being our fearless leader. For all the work she does, too.
No, it's definitely a team thing.
Kate is my hero lately with import manager conversion.
She's our hero too.
Maybe we're gonna be like, instead of Charlie's Angels, we'll call you guys Nirav's Angels.
Oh God.
We're something.
Yeah.
I want the little pose, with the
yeah, the guns.
I like it.
It's time to hire a male, I think, QI coordinator. Get our diversity going. Oh,
right.
Yeah, we got an awesome team. It was pretty awesome this year. Brooke and Mayor pretty much handled the upgrade changes and moving that along with the programmers, which is sweet. There have been years where I have been alone, so it is awesome to have a full bench. That is for sure. I hope you guys have a great weekend, and thanks for all joining, and maybe next year we'll be in person, but let's plan on a March meeting for all of us, and don't forget to register for the October meeting. Okay. I'm hoping you can all be there. That would be great. Thanks to all of our presenters, and have a great weekend, guys.
Bye.
Bye, everyone. Take care.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.